Good afternoon. If we could take our seats, please. I'd like to welcome you to today's event, Iraq Through the Eyes of an Iraqi, co-sponsored by the Middle East Institute and the United States Institute of Peace. And before we go any further, I would like to ask everybody to reach inside your pocket or your purse and that little electronic device that has an on-off button on it, would you please turn it off or put your cell phones to stun so it won't disrupt the discussion today. Following the September briefings by Ambassador Crocker and General Petraeus, Americans continued to be seized with the issue of the war in Iraq. Many Westerners were questioning, you know, has there been progress? Has there been failure? And depending upon what side of the fence you sit on, you have your own perspectives here today. But the one voice that has been absent for so long, has at least here in America, has been the voice of Iraq. We have members of Congress stating that there should be a division of Iraq. We have members of Congress stating there shouldn't be a division of Iraq. A wide range of comments going back and forth, but nobody is ever really asking the Iraqi government or the Iraqi people what they want. And as a sovereign state, it's only fair that they do have a voice in their future. So today, the Middle East Institute and the U.S. Institute of Peace are pleased to present Dr. Ali al-Dabakh, the spokesman for the Office of the Prime Minister of the Government of Iraq. Many of you have met Dr. Ali before. He's no stranger here at the U.S. Institute of Peace. His biography is out on the table if you want to really read the details of what he's done. He's had a very rich and interesting life, to say the least. Without further ado, then, it's my pleasure to welcome back to the U.S. Institute of Peace and on behalf of the Middle East Institute, Dr. Ali al-Dabakh, who will give us a few comments for about 10 minutes, and then we will open the floor up to questions and answers from Dr. Ali. And when we do the Q&As, as usual, we have the two microphones, and people will just queue up in front of the microphones, and I will call on people to answer. So without further ado, Dr. Ali, please.
Thank you, Paul. Shukran. Thank you for you, and it's a great opportunity for me to have to be given this opportunity. I apologize for my weak English, so it's better than speaking Arabic. I will brief on two issues which is of concern here. One is the national reconciliation, and the second, the regional situation with Iraq. As you are aware, that the national reconciliation is a strategic plan which has been initiated by the Prime Minister last year. There is no way for Iraqis only to live together. Iraqis had shown a brave situation in spite of all the horrific casualties and horrific situation which they had faced during the last 3 or 4 years. Iraq didn't slip down to any civil war or sectarian war. Now we are experiencing in Iraq more unity of the Iraqis. More Iraqis feel that they are brothers, they are sharing this country, they have no choice only to isolate those devil enemies which they are attacking, which they are threatening all Iraqis. The threat of those extremists is not against one component, it's against all Iraqis. You could see now they had attacked the Yazidis, those very peaceful community in Iraq, and they live in a very poor areas. They had attacked them. They had attacked Sunnis, they had attacked Shia, they had attacked the Christians as well. So Iraqis found that they have to be together. There is no way only to reconcile with each other and to live together. There is two major components of the reconciliation. One is the army which has been dissolved by Paul Bremer when the Saddam bin fall. The government of Iraq had give the opportunity for more than 50,000 of the army, the previous army, to join the present Iraqi army. And this applicable also on those who didn't have the chance to join the present army. They've been given a chance to join also the civil services, and those who cannot attend because of the age, they've been given a retirement. The second issue is the de-ba'athification law, which the government had approved, a law which is called the Justice and the Accountability, in order to change this very hard word, which is de-ba'athification in Arabic. It means uprooting, which is a very hard word. They might give a wrong impression about the issue of the de-ba'athification. Everyone should be kept accountable for whatever he did, any crime he did. Others, the other Ba'athists, those Ba'ath members, they are not subject to any problem as long as they don't have any problem, they don't have any crime. So the chance will be given to all the members to join and to practice the normal life as long as they don't have a problem in the past. The second issue, the regional situation with Iraq, the regional countries. As you are aware that now the situation with Turkey, I will not go in details as there may be many questions about Turkish issue. The situation now is good that the diplomatic way, the Iraqis had shown a high responsibility. Even the good messages are coming from Erbil, from Kurdistan region government. Mr. Barzani had showed his full interest to cooperate with Turkey. President Bush going to speak with the president of Turkey this afternoon to show that the United States as well urging Turkey not to take any unilateral step to make any offensive step or crossing the border, which might create a sequence of problems not only to Iraq, to Turkey and to the region. Iraq treats Turkey as a very important partner, and it is a gate to Europe. The situation with Syria, there is a good sign from Syrians that after the Prime Minister visit, and they had shown the high level of coordination with the Iraqis in order to stop those extremists and those what's so called Mujahideen, Arab Mujahideen, to pass and to cross the border and come to Iraq. Still, we are urging the Syrian leaders to show more steps and to also to have this goodwill and this interest to be practiced with us in Iraq. The situation with the Iranian still, the situation with Iran, we feel that still there is a threat of support for those who are the militias and some of those who are breaking the law from some of the level of the Iranians. We again are urging through the last visit of the Prime Minister to Iran, he had present and addressed this problem to different level of the Iranians, starting from the Supreme Leader in Iran to other senior levels, that we want to see the support for Iraq is only through the legitimate elected government. Any support to any other group or militias, this is a sort of aggression against Iraqis. This is a clear message being presented to Iranians. We do feel that we have to maintain a very good relation with Iranians. Iran is our neighbors, and we have to get the best relation with them. Definitely, we are not going to have any... we are not responsible for any problems between the Iran and United States. We feel that we are not feeling happy for the slow speed of the dialogue between the Iranians and the Americans. We are urging both countries to continue having the dialogue between them as this reflects on Iraq positively. There is the risk of a flow of the Al-Qaeda to the neighbor countries due to good improvement on the security situation. We have a very good situation now in Al-Anbar due to the joint coordination between Iraq security forces and multinational forces, as well as the support of the tribes and tribe leaders Now we are experiencing Al-Anbar and all the West areas is safe and people are practicing normal life. They had discovered that Al-Qaeda is threatening them. So Al-Qaeda had moved to other places, and we're taking that the in Diyala as well, there is an effort from the Iraqi security forces supported by the multinational forces. So Al-Qaeda is moving toward the north. There is a great possibility that those Al-Qaeda, they might return back to the neighbor countries, which create a high risk for them. Iraq is asking and calling. There is a meeting in Kuwait tomorrow. Iraq is presenting a paper that there should be a high degree of coordination, intelligence cooperation between Iraq and those countries in order to eliminate the risk that they might return back, especially for Saudi Arabia and Jordan. We are calling that for high security coordination, especially in the next in the coming conference in Istanbul, Iraq and its neighbor. We are calling, Iraq is calling all the countries to have a better cooperation, especially on the security issues. There is one problem which we are facing also in Iraq from the neighbors, that there is the conflict between the Saudis and the Iranians is reflecting on Iraq relation with might be Saudi with the Saudis. Till now, the relation between Iraq and Saudis is not to the level which Iraqi government needs. We are looking for the having a good relation for the benefit of all the region, especially Saudi Arabia, because we are sharing a common objective. Saudis also, they've been threatened by those extremists, so we feel that a high level of coordination, a good relation between Iraq and Saudi Arabia will be for the benefit of Saudis. Thank you very much. I think that I had covered major part of this issue, so I'm ready to take any question.
Okay, for those of you who would like to ask questions, please queue up at the microphones, but I will lead off with a question that many Americans have been asking American leaders and also those who have knowledge about Iraq. So, Dr. Ali, one of the issues that relates to reconciliation in Iraq is the ability of minority parties to participate in the political process. There have been reports that some of these minority parties have not had the opportunity to fully participate. Can you tell us what the government of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki intends to do to welcome minority parties to the table to participate in the political process?
Definitely the reconciliation didn't exclude anyone. The minorities, as I understand that in the election, is very important concern about the minorities, because except the Christians, which they had a good representation, the others like Sabist and Yazidist might be didn't have a good chance to get a representation in the Council of Representatives. I think this is connected with the election law, which is not yet approved by the Election Commission. This is very important, and it is really a crucial issue that Iraqi government need to fix. I think that there is an understanding that we have to keep certain seats for those minorities in order to get them represented well in the Council of Representatives.
Thank you. I will start with Ambassador Mack, Vice President of the Middle East Institute.
Dr. Ali, thank you very much for giving us the honor with USIP of helping to host you for this occasion. My question regards the PKK presence in Iraq. I can understand the difficulties that the Iraqi government has dealing with their military training activities and cross-border activities in the far northeast of your country. I've seen that part of Iraq. It is probably somewhat akin to the Pakistan-Afghanistan border area that we find hard to deal with. So, you know, perhaps it'll be more difficult for your U.S. counterpart to answer why the United States doesn't use some of its military measures against that presence than it is for the for your government. But it's my understanding that there are PKK offices that function more or less openly in Baghdad and Erbil and perhaps Dohuk and other places in Iraqi Kurdistan. And it's a little bit harder, I should think, for your government to explain to the Turkish authorities why you can't close down those kinds of offices.
Thank you. I think that the United States is not going to do such second mistake. They couldn't get Osama bin Laden on the Afghan or Pakistan border, and they are not going definitely that to have again one more problem. This is very difficult and it's very rough area and mountainous area. Even the Turkish army, they had crossed the border 24 times till now. They couldn't get rid of the PKK. I don't think that we in Iraqi government, definitely we are not entitled to give advices to our neighbor in Turkey, but we think that not only military action could solve this problem. It's a complicated problem, and definitely that we are urging our neighbor Turkey to take whatever measure in order to find a solution and settlement of this problem. Iraq will be liable, definitely, to take any and to perform anything being agreed upon only on a joint arrangement between Iraq and Turkey. Any arrangement is being taken, definitely Iraq will do its utmost and its responsibility. Regarding the offices, I don't think that we have any offices declared as a PKK. PKK is a banded in Iraq as per the constitution, and the Iraqi government had declared PKK is a terrorist organization. So there is no offices in Baghdad, there is no offices being in Erbil and other places. I don't know, we don't know, as a central government in Iraq, we don't have any information that PKK got an offices in Iraq, but they might have a presence in some of the borders, and definitely this is out of control. Neither central government nor the regional government could defeat and could get rid of this, neither Turkey's as well, Turkish army. So we are urging that there is a trilateral committee between Iraq and Turkey and United States. We are asking that through that trilateral committee to take any action, to take any steps, and definitely that the delegate which is going to be going to Turkey by the coming after the Minister of Foreign Affairs coming tomorrow to Baghdad, there will be discussing whatever joint measure to be taken by the two countries.
Dr. Ali, one of the things that Americans are, I think, a bit confused about is the role of the Kurdistan regional government in this resolution of the PKK issue. Can you take a moment to explain to us how Baghdad is working with Erbil and what kind of responsibilities you think Erbil has in helping to resolve the PKK issue?
There is a close contact between the Prime Minister and the President Talabani. He was in Erbil yesterday, and as well as Mr. Barzani. And the Prime Minister had shown his interest that the Kurdistan region as well is involved in this issue. But keep in mind that this is the sole responsibility of the Baghdad central government, and they are dealing with this issue. But definitely Mr. Barzani showed a high level of responsibility by asking the PKK to leave Iraq, to leave Kurdistan region, and they are not going to defend them. And he is asking to a peaceful settlement, and definitely Kurdistan region will be liable for any commitment which Baghdad will be taken, which the central government will be taken. Regarding the PKK, it is a declared situation by the Kurdistan region that they are liable also to whatever Baghdad been taken as a banded organization, and they are not willing to see any activity of PKK in their homeland.
Thank you. Gordon, would you please identify yourself and your position and then ask your question?
Gordon Johnson, retired Center for Privatization. Certainly thank you for being a voice from Iraq here for us who need to know more. As a businessman, I worry most about the money. And could you tell us more about the oil revenues, and in particular, does the money still go into the oil fund that had been set up earlier that had an independent auditor with independent audit reports? Is there a credible system to measure the oil? As I understand it, for a long time, they never even were able to measure how much oil was being produced, which is, of course, if you can't measure it, it's hard to control it. Now, how much oil is moved outside the system, do you think, lost to the government? What kind of audit track or supervision exists to track the flow of the $40 billion that goes into the national budget? Does Iraq subscribe to the IMF publish what you pay doctrine? I think it's called the Extractive Industries Transparency Agreement, something like that. But it's an agreement to publish the terms in which oil is sold. And is there any prospect for a cash dividend from the oil revenues to be paid directly to the Iraqi people, which was talked about, not an Alaska plan, which is an investment fund, but something that will go direct to the people right away, cash to the people. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Regarding the oil revenue, we are still, for the sharing of the revenues, we are waiting the revenue sharing law, which is not yet approved, but Iraqi government had decided this year to have an equitable sharing for the revenue through the region and the governorate. There is an equitable formula being adopted as per the constitution, and the government of Iraq had the budget of 2007 as well as 2008. So we are performing an equitable formula even though the revenue sharing law still. There is a cash money being paid through security, social security network, which has been adopted, and we are paying for the families, poor families. They are paying cash money for them. Other monies for the sharing that's been paid to the governorate. Governorate themselves, they are doing their project, the planning, the execution. The next year, 30% of this budget will be increased. To get the involvement and participation of the government directly rather than that it come from the federal government. Regarding the metering, being operative now since 6 months, and there is a transparency in the flow of the quantity produced, and as well as this was what exported. Definitely we do need more measure to be taken in order to have a better transparency. Part of the transparency that the figures should be declared. I think from the 2009, all this going to be declared publicly. Till then, there is a now measure being taken in order to keep the all the quantity being traced properly by the Ministry of Oil. The money is still going on DFI. I think Iraq is asking to renew the for 2008 as well, that the money is going, because still it is the under the DFI. I don't have that much details. It is fully, there is a negotiation with the IMF now, the Minister of Finance here and the Central Bank Governor as well here. They are negotiating on extension of the agreement with the IMF for the 2008 as well.
Sir?
Lu'ay Bahri, Middle East Institute. Could you thank you very much, Dr. Ali, for your talk, and direct talk. Could you please explain to us what the situation with Kirkuk? Is the referendum going to take place before the end of this year, as should be, or is there any development? Is it going to take place ever?
Thank you, Yunus. The referendum needs to have a census in Kirkuk. Till now, there is no preparation for having this census in Kirkuk. The government had started the normalization of the situation in Kirkuk. money is being paid for those which are willing to migrate from Kirkuk to their home cities back, and for those who've been also displaced from Kirkuk earlier, money is being paid for them to settle in Kirkuk. So there is a normalization steps being taken by the government. But I think, personally, I think that there is no time is not enough for the end of the year to have a referendum in Kirkuk.
Good afternoon. I'm Bob Dreyfus. I'm a journalist here. The Post this morning talks about a strategy paper that the ambassador and General Petraeus have put together that says that now the United States will begin to focus more intensively on Shia militias rather than the Sunni insurgency, which is waning, and that al-Qaeda has been weakened and so forth. And as far back as January, when President Bush announced the surge, he gave American commanders the power to take on Iran inside Iraq, supplies and training and infiltration and other things. So my question to you is, if you could be as specific as possible in explaining to us what is Iran's present role inside Iraq. Some people say that they work more closely with Muqtada al-Sadr. Some people say that they're more close to the Hakims and the Badr organization. So which is it? Who are the Iranian allies in Iraq, and what role is Iran playing with the militias, especially those two militias, the Jaish al-Mahdi and also the Badr group? Are they working with Iran? Are those the groups that you're concerned about? Because we don't really get specifics.
Yes. It is too early to say that al-Qaeda has been eliminated from Iraq. Still, it's creating a high threat. It's much more than the militias. Al-Qaeda is trying to destroy the whole political process in Iraq. Keep in mind at the same time that the militias, whether they are Shia militias or Sunni militias or whoever militias, at the end they are breaking the law. They cannot be categorized as Shia or Sunni. They are breaking the law. Yes, Iran is helping and supporting many militias, Shia and Sunni militias. And at the end that Iran is looking to have a group which support their agenda in Iraq. But the Iraqi government are also confronting those militias, even the Shia militias. You could find that in Karbala 2 months back, the Prime Minister himself had went there for 2 days, and then he had fixed the problem of some of the militias had tried to create. The same is applicable on some of the governorate in south of Iraq, especially in Diwaniya the last 2 days. So there is no favoring for some of the militias. They are connected with many of the group, many of the parties. Iran is trying to support many parties. Actually, we don't treat as a Badr Brigade as doing any breaking the law. They are more integrating in the civil services. But still, at the end, they are militias. There is no good militias, there is no bad militias. All they come under the category of militias. I think Iraqi government is looking to have disarming of all of the militias. We cannot have a state which is ruled by the militias. There is no way that the militias sharing the responsibility of the security with the Iraqi National Security Force.
So what is Iran's, you didn't mention Iran, what is Iran's role in supporting these militias?
Iran had negative role in supporting many groups in Iraq, and still it constitutes a threat to Iraq. It constitutes a threat to political process. This is a declared situation of the Iraqi government.
If I might follow up on that point, Dr. Ali, what is Prime Minister Maliki planning as far as dealing with the militias in terms of demobilizing them and reintegrating their members back into society? There are so many reports about apparently the reluctance of the Iraqi government to allow the multinational forces to deal with militias, that when the multinational forces actually try to do something with militias, there is a political interference from the central government. Can you comment on those reports and tell us what the plan is to demobilize the militias?
Yes. Demobilizing or disarming the militias is a political decision. It should be taken not only by government, it should be taken by all the political parties and the groups. Those who had militias and those who didn't have militias, they should agree on a certain formula to demobilize and disarm the militias. Till now, there is no such agreement. But the government had declared a policy that none of the militias is allowed. None of the militias is allowed to share the responsibility with the government. This is a declared policy when we had declared the Baghdad security plan. There is no exclusion, there is no exception for any militias. Any militias shows they are not respecting the law, they should be arrested. It is not allowed to have any weapons in the hand of anyone. Till then, there should be a political process. Till now, there is no political consensus on this issue, but the government is trying in its within its capacity to protect the Iraqis from the militias. The good thing now, the Iraqi people, they start realize that it is not for their interest, the militias should protect them. So Iraqi people are against the militias. This shows in many places now, in the south, in some of the militias is being confronted by Iraqi people. Iraqi people are fighting those militias. This shows in Karbala, in Diwaniya, in Smawa, in Nasriya, in many places. This is a good sign that it will help the Iraqi government to easily disarm and demobilize the militias.
Thank you. Sir, if you'll identify yourself and...
Yes, my name is Mohammed Said Wafi. I'm with the Iraqiya TV. The chief of the Revolutionary Guard in Iran a couple of days ago did threaten to use anti-strikes of 11,000 missiles a minute if any of the Iranian territories be hit by the American forces. How serious is the Iraqi government taking those threats as allies of the United States and Middle East?
I think major numbers of this 11,000 will come on in Iraq if it has happened. So we are urging both countries to settle their problem peacefully. We believe that a good relation between Iran and United States will be for the benefit of Iraq. And sometimes when have relation becomes bad, then we are paying in Iraq. And you could see that some of the messages has been passed through our blood in Iraq. That is why we feel that the conflict with Iran needs to be addressed between the two countries in different way. We are calling the two countries to review this relation and to get rid of any issues which might create instability in the region. Definitely the Iraqi government are not supporting any strike against Iran. The Iraqi government is against having any sort of fighting with Iran between the United States and Iran. It is for the benefit of Iraq, it is for the benefit of all the region in the Gulf.
Just as a follow-up to that, what is your government's position on the issue of Iran developing nuclear weapons?
I think this is a threat to the whole region and threat to Iraqis as well. As long as this weapon is being used as a military, as used for the attack and the threat, is definitely threatening us in Iraq. So we do urge all the countries in the region to get rid of any issues which might create instability in the region, including the nuclear issue in Iran.
Sir.
Thank you. Howard LaFranchi with the Christian Science Monitor. And speaking about national reconciliation, you spoke of some measures that are being taken to reverse debathification steps. to move towards national reconciliation. Yet, to my knowledge, the debeatification law has not been passed by Parliament. So I'm wondering how those steps are being taken without the law having been passed. And then secondly, are there other components of national reconciliation among those that were included in what were called the benchmarks for national reconciliation? Are there other steps that are being taken that sort of follow that pattern where things are happening even though Parliament hasn't acted or laws have not been passed?
Yes. No, I said the debeatification law, which is accountability and justice, has been approved by the Cabinet and then forwarded to the Council of Representatives. For approval, there is a technical issue is being postponed. Otherwise, it could be discussed and debated 2 weeks back. Definitely, there are many benchmark being achieved by the reconciliation. One of it is the Al-Anbar issue. Al-Anbar couldn't happen without reconciliation. The people in Al-Anbar feel that they have to reconcile with all other components in Iraq. And this is part of it. In Diyala as well, many of the fighters which they were fighting against the government, and then they've been included and they've been given a chance. 14,000 of those fighters has been given a chance to come forward and to participate in the government effort to fight Al-Qaeda. This is also is a reconciliation. Lot of issues, I avoid to mention it. Many benefit, many outcome which comes out of the reconciliation. So we do feel that the reconciliation, we do need also more steps to be taken. It is not only limited to that. The government needs to take more steps. There are many recommendations being forwarded to the government through the conferences which has been held, which we've been held last year and this year as well. And definitely the government needs to translate, needs to change all this recommendation to sort of legislation in order to give assurances to all the components that they are working, the government is working for reconciliation.
If I could follow up on that, as you know, U.S. officials, including right up to President Bush, have talked about the bottom-up process that has taken place in encouraging not only Anbar but other aspects of national reconciliation, suggesting a frustration or sort of doing an end run around the central government, which has not been acting quick enough in some views. So I'm wondering if that sort of bottom-up philosophy is viewed as a threat by the central government or not supportive?
Including the tribes, or participation of the tribes in the security effort, the Iraqi government see it that as it should be through a certain Iraqi scales. It should be jointly being performed by the Iraqi government as well as the multinational forces. We feel that recruiting any of the tribes without any control, this might create another one more militia. That is why Iraqi government had set a committee, a central committee, to check and to make filtration of all those whom been nominated by the multinational forces or any others that should go through an Iraqi filtration in order to get control of it. The success of Al-Anbar could not happen without such a scale. Definitely that the same is applicable on Diyala. We still believe that the intention of General Petraeus is to get a quick success, to speed up the success, but at the end we should avoid having the recruiting some of the fighters without proper filtration.
I might add that recently the U.S. Institute of Peace helped facilitate a reconciliation process in the region of Mahmoudiya, which traditionally Americans call the Triangle of Death. Just last week, the tribal sheikhs of Mahmoudiya came together and made a groundbreaking agreement. There is a flyer on the table outside that elaborates on the process and the players that were involved, and it's another form of reconciliation that begins at the local level in Iraq and one that we as an institute hope to replicate in support of the Iraqi government at both the national and local levels. Brent?
Dr. Ali, thank you for your statement, and it's a pleasure to see you.
Pardon me, would you please identify for...
Oh, yes. I'm Rendal Rahim. I'm a fellow at USIP. Sorry. Several issues have been brought up here, and I want to reiterate a few of them, put them in a different context. We have the oil law, and as I recall, in July, the cabinet sent it up to parliament, and yet nothing has happened since then. You mentioned the accountability and justice law. That should replace the debathification. That has also gone up to Parliament. We also have the issue of the ministries, the cabinet. Since summer of 2006, Prime Minister Maliki mentioned that he wanted to make changes, and there seemed to be a consensus about that. It just seems to me that there are a lot of rather crucial issues that have to do with the progress of the nation as a whole and the progress of the national government, whether it be in economics, in reconciliation, in development, in its own cabinet, that are stuck somewhere in the system. Could you help us to, at least in terms of the oil law and the issue of the ministries? I mean, there are 17 ministers who are neither in the government nor out of the government. And it's unclear how they're functioning, whether they're functioning. My understanding is that they don't attend cabinet meetings, but they go to their ministries. Could you explain to us why those two issues at least are stalemated and why they're stuck and what could be done to get them unstuck? Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. I don't deny we have a problem. We have a political problem, and we need a reform. And this is not connected with the government, not connected with the Prime Minister only. This is the responsibility of all the parties which participate in the government. This reform, unless happen within the coming 2 months, I think the situation will be fragile. That we might face a problem because the situation cannot continue with what we have right now. I think it's one of the problems which we have. There is a lack of trust between the parties in the parliament, and this reflected on the cabinet. So difficulties which is facing everybody, including even the Prime Minister. There is a good sign that some arrangement been taken in order to replace the six ministries by Sadrist, which has been, they had gave the authority to the Prime Minister to replace them with the independent technocrat. This is one step will be taken by the government, I think, within the coming weeks. There is an agreement between the Sadrist as well as the Abdulaziz al-Hakim. This might entitle get an easy voting in the parliament for the six ministers. Accordingly, if this happens, then the government will be in a good position to replace the other ministers of the other party, the Al-Tawafuq party. I think at the end, the people are realizing, those who are boycotting, who are walking out from the cabinet, that this is not a right play. This is not right step. And even part of the Al-Tawafuq party, they are willing to come back. And one of their minister of planning had came and joined the cabinet, and I think there is also some others want to join, but they need to discuss with their party. At the end, those legislation definitely needs an effort from the government. The great responsibility is on the government, on a prime minister, to call the other blocs and to solve the problem. I think that within the next two months, there will be a step being taken in order to solve this conflict, to solve this problem, which is stop and block all the political process.
And the oil law?
Yes, oil law, I think there is a technical problem in the oil law. As you are aware, that 26th of February, the cabinet had approved the oil law. And then again, it's been there's an amendment in, and there's editing in the draft. This makes the Kurd object. Finally, they had agreed to go back to that draft. But the thing which is strange, which is nobody had understand that the Al-Tawafiq had approved and they had accept that draft. And now they are showing that they are not accepting the draft, not because of they are refusing this oil law, but because they have a problem with the prime minister and they want to block this oil law. They know very well that how important is this oil law for Iraq, and it is a sort of putting and applying pressure on the prime minister and on the government. I think that there will be finally there will be an option for the government to look for from the component, let me say clearly, I don't want to use the words, from the Sunni component, to find out from other group like Al-Anbar tribes, they had present themselves as also they are representing the Sunnis, and they should be included in the new cabinet.
Thank you. Please.
Nuh Yilmaz, Star Newspaper. I just wanted to ask you about the PKK. As a central Iraqi government, what kind of concrete measures are you planning to take against PKK?
We are not going to work as a police for Turkey. This is one of the issues which I want to declare clearly. But we are ready and liable to take any measure which comes on an agreement between Iraq and Turkey. I think that a joint measure and a joint arrangement will be the only way that Iraq will be liable to. Any pressure being applied on Iraqi government to take any steps, I don't think that it will lead to any solution to this conflict. It is too complicated, and we feel that the joint committees, the joint agreement which we had with Turkey, is the only way to get this problem solved.
Thanks.
Ahmed Sulaiman, business consultant. The question is, some Arab newspapers mentioned that the Kurdistan regional government is studying to have a new pipeline extending from Kirkuk to one of the Mediterranean ports to create their own independent oil revenues. How far is this true?
I don't think that it is true. This is just, I think, is hopes. This is the sole responsibility of the central government. I don't think that the regions, independent whether they are Kurdistan or other regions might be formed in the future, they have the authority and they have the power to negotiate on laying a pipeline. This is the sole responsibility of the federal government.
Please.
James Kitfield from National Journal Magazine. I want to fill you out a little more on the PKK issue as far as what this joint agreement between Iraq and Turkey would look like. What would be the specifics of such an agreement? Because when you talk to the Turks, as I have, they have suspicions that the PKK has a lot of sympathy among the Kurdistan government. When you talk to Iraqis or hear them talk, as I have in recent days, they don't want to be forced by Turkey into a military confrontation with the PKK, but there's this talk of, okay, if we reach a joint agreement, that's the way to solve the problem. What would the joint agreement do to stop the PKK from launching cross-border attacks?
The sympathy is natural between the Kurd, Iraqi Kurd, and the Turk, and the Turkish Kurd. But this will definitely not entitle the Kurdistan region to support or to give any logistic support to PKK. We believe that there could be a lot of measure will be taken by Iraqis. But again, this is through a joint arrangement with Turkey. Iraq had did through the trilateral committee, whatever decision been taken, whatever commitment, whatever recommendation, Iraq had take all and fulfill all his responsibility. Finally, we are calling Turkey to have the trilateral committee activated and to take whatever measure. We don't have a plan, we don't have an agreement ready, but we had signed an agreement on 26th of September, which described the anti-terrorism and anti-crime measure between the two countries, and Iraq is liable to perform its responsibility, and also Iraq will be liable to perform any responsibility might be agreed upon in any joint committees.
Just a quick follow-up. Can you conceive of such an agreement being that if Turkey agrees not to incur over Iraq's border, that Iraqi would agree to militarily confront the PKK?
Anything could be discussed, but this should come through a joint arrangement and joint committee between Iraq.
As always, Phoebe, it's good to see you back here at USIP. Please.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back. Phoebe Moore, former fellow at the USIP, also long connected with the Middle East Institute. Thank you, Dr. Ali, for coming and sharing your views with us. As you know, there's been a lot of discussion in the United States, particularly in this campaign season, of something we're calling, the U.S. is calling soft partition in Iraq. This statements and so on have gotten a lot of reaction in the Middle East and also in your country. I wonder if you could tell us where you think the federalism issue is going in Iraq. Not only, of course, in Kurdistan, you've addressed the Kirkuk issue, but in the Shia areas in the south, Sunni areas. I'd just like to hear you elaborate a little on that.
I think that the issue of the self-partition, it's a big mistake which has been taken by the Senate House. This is the responsibility of the Iraqis. Iraqis had showed that they are united. And I think the risk of disintegration of Iraq is gone. There is Iraqis now show, but still we have a problem, definitely. And due to that problem, due to the ethnic diversity in Iraq, we do need the federalism. Federalism needs preparation. We cannot have it in such a quick way. We think that the federalism could maintain the unity of Iraq. Those who are objecting on federalism, they might create a problem. And if Iraq will not be a federal country, I think the risk will come of a partition in Iraq. That is why federalism. But what type of federalism, when it will be implemented, this is the issue in the debate in Iraq. Definitely, I feel that we do need to address the problems of the federalism, the problem of having no federalism also, the problem of accepting the federalism regionally, and there is the anti-federalism in some of the Arab countries in Iraq. This should be addressed before having any sort of federalism in Iraq.
Please.
Hi, Dr. Al-Dabakh. My name is Shadi Malaklu from Sister Cities International. I have perhaps a less loaded question. I administer a program for Iraqi youth who come over as part of the State Department for a month to study about citizen diplomacy. And the fear of the very ardent, tangible fear of many of them was that if the United States troops leave, they will all die, and that they will die a very, very cruel death at the hands of the militias. And it doesn't seem like a problem that the central government, that the federal government in Baghdad is capable of controlling, because there's so many different factions of militias. And it seems like something that maybe local governments need to take up. What is the relationship between your government and these local governments in setting them up and preparing them for dealing with things like militia attacks?
Unfortunately, whenever the word militia comes, it comes like a Shia. And then it is percepted in this way. While the militias, all those who break the law, we have the militias under different names. Again, we cannot survive with the militias. the militias is threatening, the Shia militias are threatening the Shia areas. This is a very important issue that everybody should understand. That is why the people that understand that it is for their benefit, it's for their interest to fight those militias. I think that the government is did enough. The government doing enough in order to defeat this, those militias. But at the end, keep in mind that we are building up our forces. We are building up our security forces. We don't have that intelligence which defeats such militias, which they are hiding, like what we had yesterday in Sadr City. They are hiding among the highly populated area like Sadr City, and they are creating a great, great threat to the people, not only to the government. I think that the most high number of casualties among the multinational forces didn't come from the militias. It comes mainly from Al-Qaeda, which they are killing thousands of Iraqis. With keep in consideration that militias also is a sort of a threat, the high threat also. And the government is working all its and taking all measure in order to defeat those militias.
Just as a follow-up to that, then you would not agree with the new strategy paper that Ambassador Crocker and General Petraeus have put together that states unequivocally that the Shia militias are now viewed as the major threat to the multinational force?
I think it's a big threat, definitely. I do agree that they are a big threat to the situation in Iraq. But still, I don't want to downvalue the threat of what Al-Qaeda and the other extremists are creating for Iraq.
Okay, thank you. Please.
Hi, Maurice Fichet from the Middle East Media Research Institute. Welcome, Dr. Ali, to see you again. A couple of days ago, it was reported in the news that China and Iran won two contracts to build power plants in Iraq worth $1.1 billion. The White House spokesperson and the a spokesperson from the American Embassy in Baghdad both expressed their concern about these agreements, these contracts. Do you know if the tender offers were granted to those two countries openly in the market, specifically to Iran, since it was reported that the power plant that will be built between Najaf and Karbala are essentially free of charge?
I think it's a choice of the Iraqi government. Iraq government is a sovereign government, and they find whatever been taken in order to give the contract to any companies. There is a free bidding, and they found that an Iranian contractor, he bid a cheaper offer for Sadr, for the Sadr City power plant. For the Najaf power plant has been donated by the Iranian government. Definitely, we are against giving Iranians any opportunity to practice the threat through getting any contract in Iraq. This is against the policy of the government. Government are welcoming the help and support from the Iranians on a basis that should not be taken any coverage to any interference in Iraq.
I'm going to start with this side here, and then I'll come back to you. So please.
Haytham al-Hassani from Iraq Foundation. This is with regards to Al-Qaeda. Can the Iraq government give us an estimation of how many fighters Al-Qaeda have in Iraq and those who provide them with logistics?
Yes, it's difficult, but we have a sort of assessment that they are exceeding 5,000.
The fighters?
The Arab fighters, more than 5,000, but the problem now we have a local Iraqi Al-Qaeda also has been participating.
Do you have an estimation of those?
No, we don't have.
What about those who provide them with logistics?
Yes, the ex-Ba'athists, I think they are still providing, and Ba'ath parties, activists, they are also part of the threat which is giving still giving the all the logistic support for them, giving all the weapons. So this is creating also a sort of a threat for Iraqis. Thank you.
Please, sir.
Kasım Cindemir with Turkish Daily Hürriyet. Sir, how will your government respond if Turkey has a cross-border operation against the PKK?
We are not in a situation to confront Turkish military and Turkish troops, definitely. And I don't think that the Turkish troops intending to attack the Iraqis in the while crossing the border. But we are calling the Turkish government that Iraq is willing to have a good relation. Turkey is a major partner for Iraq. Turkey is a gate to Europe. And we know very well that Mr. Erdogan and all the Turkish leaders have the interest of having good relation with Iraq. So all of that, and beside that, the international community are calling Turkey not to take any offensive step of crossing the border. We all of this, we think that Turkey will take it in consideration. Until now, Turkey has had shown a restraint. We are calling the Turkish leader that PKK should not make them react in a way which threat this relation and threat this interest of the Iraqi government.
Please, sir.
My name is Fahad Nazar. I'm with the Institute for Gulf Affairs. I'm wondering if you can address the state of Iraqi-Saudi relations in a bit more detail. You mentioned earlier that they're not where you want them to be, and I'm wondering if you can elaborate on that. And also the Saudis said that they would be sending a delegation to Baghdad to explore the possibility of reopening their embassy, and I'm wondering if you can update us on that.
Thank you. Yes, we really think that the Iraqi-Saudi relations is very important. And this is a cornerstone in the Iraqi-Arab relation. We think that we are welcoming the Saudi step to open their embassy in Baghdad, but we do need the level of cooperation much better. I think there's a lot of things to be done irrespective of what they feel. Without having a good relation with Iraq, I think the Arabs did doing a big mistake, a strategic mistake, because they are pushing the Iraqis toward Iran. And this is not good, and is not for the interest of the Arab countries. Arab countries could accept the idea that we do need a good relation with Iran. We do need a relation with Iran much better and stronger than the other Arab countries have. They are our neighbor, Iran. We don't want to fight on behalf of Arab. We do need to live peacefully with Iranians on a basis that Iran should not interfere. Without strengthening these ideas among the Iraqis, neither United States nor the Arab people will stop Iranians from influencing and have influence in Iraq. We do believe that Saudis could play a major role in this one, and we are looking for a Saudi role to have a better relation with Iraqis. Thank you.
Please.
Hi, Noor Kardar, USIP. You mentioned that the Kirkuk referendum will not be taking place this year. What measurements is the government taking to ensure that violence doesn't break out there? Because I'm sure there'll be a lot of people disappointed.
Yes, this was a personal view, my personal view. But Iraqi government are committed to the constitution. Constitution shows that we have to take the steps needed in order to have referendum in Kirkuk. Definitely that the Iraqi government is working to have a stable Kirkuk in order to have the census. Without having an accepted level of security, we cannot perform the census in Kirkuk. And accordingly, we can't do the referendum. So the declared situation and position of the Iraqi government, we are totally following the steps in the constitution, but with the limitation of having the security situation not enough in Kirkuk to perform the referendum.
Yeah. Jessica Windham of the Brookings Institution Project on Internal Displacement. My question is somewhat hypothetical depending on the results of the US election next year, but I was wondering if the US does withdraw or significantly downsize its forces in Iraq, what the effects would be on the humanitarian situation within Iraq?
We feel that nothing will happen because the withdrawal is not going to be of a sudden. They will not be in a way that everybody is thinking that is not for the interest of the United States, not interest of the regional countries, not interest for all Iraqis to have a premature withdrawal for the troops. This will create a sequence of problems, and then vacuum of power will be, and definitely there will be, still there is a threat. There is a good development in Iraqi security forces, so Iraqis will definitely will cover any withdrawal of any forces which is expected to be from now on till the next summer. I think the Iraqi security forces will be in a position to replace whatever troops being withdrawn.
Dr. Ali, thank you so much for your insightful comments. But before we adjourn for the afternoon, I'd like to pose one last question and then let you have an opportunity to say whatever you'd like to say that you haven't had a chance to say yet. Here in Washington, D.C., there's a great deal of discussion and a great deal of angst about the presence of American forces in Iraq and how long they should stay. Some are advocating that we cannot leave until the mission is completed in terms of defeating al-Qaeda. Others are saying that now that the multinational force in Iraq is having success, that should justify the withdrawal of American forces. Given that this is such a hot topic today in Washington, I'd like to ask you to give your view of this perspective and then tell us what Baghdad sees about Washington, D.C.
Yes, this is my last comment, so good that you had raised it as a question. I think that we did a huge sacrifice, and you did the sacrifice. You here in the United States did sacrifice, big sacrifice in Iraq. We should not lose it. I think that we have a good development since we had agreed the Iraqi government and the as per the strategic plan of President Bush, there is a good cooperation and there is a good achievement and there's good development of Iraqi security forces. Now they are taking more lead. We are really, but still we do need more training. We do need more equipping. We are lack of equipment still. Police. Still, they have a problem of they don't have enough gun machines in their hand. So we think that with such a speed which is going on, that we could achieve a good development and good Iraqi security forces which could replace the next year might be is a good sign of withdrawal and good sign that. The multinational forces could withdraw a significant number. There is one thing that Iraq is asking that this year will be the last extension for the multinational forces. And accordingly, Iraq is calling to be lifted from Chapter 7 of the United Nations resolution, which give the full sovereignty for Iraqis. Iraq also is looking to replace the multinational forces with bilateral arrangement with the United States, with the British, and with any other countries they might will to stay in Iraq. But we do believe that we need to complete the mission. We cannot leave. You cannot leave Iraq in a situation which creates a threat not only to Iraq, not only to the region. You could see now the threat is being expanded. The threat went to Lebanon. We have also an information that the thing which is happening in Algeria and Morocco is connected in somehow with the Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And this will be a great risk of a premature withdrawal. There should be an arrangement and should be a proper arrangement that Iraqis should replace any troops should be withdrawn. Due to any circumstances, whether it is an election or non-election, the Americans at the end, they are they should think about the benefit or about the losses of having a premature withdrawal for their troops. We still believe that the relation with what you said in Washington, we believe that we do need to have a strategic relation between Iraq and United States. We are calling to have such relation. Iraq is a very important country. It's a rich country, and not only in the resources. In many other issues, Iraq is very important and represent a major country in the region. And the stability of Iraq definitely is of interest for anyone who is coming in the White House. So at the end, Iraqis is looking to have a strategic relation. Iraqi people definitely appreciate all the sacrifice which the Americans they did for Iraq and for establishing a democracy in Iraq. It is not an easy job. Keep in mind that we are in tyranny for 35 years of destruction in Iraq. It's not easy to move within just 4 years or 5 years. We do need to be patient. I do agree that a lot of things to be done in Iraq, a lot of things not being done in Iraq, and Iraqis could do it, but this is the problem. Keep in mind the level of a threat which we are facing in Iraq. All of this take it in consideration, and then look for a future that Iraq, a stable Iraq, could play a major role in the region. And it will be, at the end, is therefore the interest of the international community as well as the interest of the regional country to have Iraq a stable country, not creating any threat, which they had. Iraq was just a point of a threat since 50 years to all the region. Wars being created, not smooth relation with the neighbors being created by Iraq. And this, again, we do need to move to a new era that Iraq will play a major role in the region. Thank you very much. Thank you for the USIPs and for you all of having such honor for me to be with you. And I appreciate all of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.